Check this out.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
When Odell takes the field, it will have been what?
Yeah, 500 plus days.
Since he's played a football game.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Ravens gave him $15 million. And the Giants are like, yeah, do we give Saquon Barkley $15 million a year? That's what they're thinking.
Today's guests, the Fire Pit Collective golf writer, Alan Shipnott, NBC Sports Boston Patriots insider, Tom Curran, from FX's Justified City Primeval, actor Timothy Olyphant. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
We're back after a long weekend of so much fun on our sports television. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, watching us on Roku. We say hello to everybody out there. We're very excited to have you here on the Roku channel, free on all Roku devices, select Samsung smart TVs, Amazon Fire TV, the Roku app, and the RokuChannel.com is how you can watch us every day live between 12 and 3 Eastern Time. We say hello to those listening to us on terrestrial radio, Sirius XM, Odyssey, our podcast as well. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on this program. It is Open Championship Week. And so we've got our friend Alan Shipnuck from the Fire Pit Collective joining us to see what's going on from the world of golf, from what we saw over the weekend in Scotland, where they call it golf without the L. Rory McIlroy with a big W going into the Open Championship Week. Steph Curry winning the celebrity tournament that went down in Tahoe. The old Stableford. So he can do well with the NBA point system and the Stableford scoring system, as we all saw over the weekend. And so Alan Shipnuck will be joining us to talk about that. Hour number three, one of our favorites from back in the day on our podcast on back on the NFL Network. He set the record for most curse words in the history of the Rich Eisen podcast, from which this show was born about 10 years ago. Timothy Olyphant will be here on this program. He is in the new FX Justified City Primeval. He's back again as Raylan Givens, and we're excited about having him here on this program. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Tommy Curran will be the first up to talk football on this program from NBC Sports Boston, where the Patriots lost out on DeAndre Hopkins over the weekend. And we also have our eye completely trained on what's going down in the world of the franchise tags in the NFL. There is a 4 p.m. Eastern deadline. 1 hour after we go off the air, it'll be up to the Giants and Saquon Barkley to figure out a long-term deal, Josh Jacobs and the Raiders to figure out a long-term deal, and it appears Tony Pollard and the Cowboys will not figure that out, and Pollard will play on the franchise tag. He signed that tender lickety-split back in the spring, and he'll be making $10 million bucks, $10.1 million, don't want to short him. Every penny. So we'll keep an eye on all of that to as you know, we've been quite zeroed in on the running back market of late here when we were talking about the NFL. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you,
hey,
sir?
Hey, Rich. What's up, man?
DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts is not here today. Jason Feller, good to see you here at the top of the work
week. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Good to see you over there, TJ Jefferson. Hey. Is the candle already lit?
Good morning, Chef, and the candle is lit.
Okay, so you've been watching the Bear? Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, I'm always watching the Bear.
So let's talk about DeAndre Hopkins, who said he wanted to go to a team with a stable quarterback or a stable coaching staff, and he wanted to go to a team with a championship defense, and he chose the Titans. No, hey, look, you're laughing.
Yeah.
And you're laughing. You're laughing. You're laughing. Let me put a little bit of respect on the Titans name, and I understand I've said that the wrong way, but let me just put a little bit of respect on what's going on in Tennessee. Mike Vrabel is the coach of the year in the National Football League, one season removed. He didn't forget how to do it. And last year, the Titans, we all know, fell off a cliff. But they, like my Jets, had major quarterback issues. And it was just two playoff seasons ago that Ryan Tannehill did have that fourth seat at the AFC Final Four table, divisional playoff weekend table, that we've been talking about for two seasons now. That you've got our friends in Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow having three of those four seats, and we're assuming they're going to have that situation again this year, and we all know the problem with assuming. But last year it was Trevor Lawrence who had the seat because the Jaguars made that run to overtake the Titans, who had a dreadful quarterback scenario. And the kid from Liberty, Malik Willis, who wasn't ready to play. And they turned to Joshua Dobbs in the last 2 weeks of the season, trying to make the playoffs with Dobbs. Tannehill's back, people. Tannehill is back. And
is that supposed to be inspirational?
Hold on a second. You could do a whole lot worse than Tannehill, DeAndre Hopkins, and Derrick Henry.
That's true.
That's not bad.
Yeah, you can also do a whole lot better.
I know. I understand
fair,
that.
Fair, high register.
I understand that. I understand it. But he wanted to get paid, clearly. And the Titans were willing to get him in the neighborhood of Odell Beckham Jr.'s contract. And it appears it's 2 years, $26 million. He can get up to $15 million this year with incentives. And whatever those incentives are, as long as he stays healthy and Derrick Henry provides that rushing attack that we're all expecting him to provide, and Tannehill stays healthy, one would think Hopkins is going to make that money. And the Titans needed him, folks. Did you know, prior to DeAndre Hopkins's agreement in principle and signing, did you know who on the Titans team had the most career receiving touchdowns? Did you know, again, who in the Titans organization, I'm giving hints with the way I'm phrasing it,
talking currently,
had the most currently?
Mike Vrabel.
Correct. The coach.
8 for 8.
And you want to include playoffs? It was 12.
Hey.
Mike Vrabel, the coach, the linebacker, who is Brady's favorite gimmick touchdown maker.
This is not helping your argument.
What I'm saying is
whatever
they needed
you're making,
him.
This isn't
no,
helping.
I'm saying they needed him. And in the same way that the Ravens needed, to get Odell Beckham Jr. in the fold, not only for Lamar to see that they mean business about changing the way that they're operating on offense while Lamar was still out in the cold, having another voice look into the camera and say, Lamar, come in from the cold, other than anyone in management, and to give the impression to the rest of the free agent world, the rest of the wide receiver world. Guess what? We are not the end of the line here. We are not the place where you go to get no catches. The place where you go to not get yours. We're flipping a script. So we'll pay Odell more than what you think he is worth, because he's worth more to us. Same thing with DeAndre Hopkins and this Titans team. Did they desperately need him? Now, your point, TJ, is this team with DeAndre Hopkins might just be pouring a glass of wine in their ocean of mediocrity. It's a little glass of water. Just putting in a bucket of water. It just doesn't make any difference. It gets lost. And, you know, the Titans, as you know, and their fan base in Tennessee, they soak in that disrespect. They soak that stuff in. So now the battle is joined a little bit better by the Titans. They can tell their fan base, we're trying to win. They did know they had a problem at that position, and they spent it on the best player available at the position, DeAndre Hopkins. Is he going to be Julio Jones plus? Is he going to be the D-hop that we all have come to know and see? The guy who gets his feet in every single time? The guy who grabs every pass? Can he actually be better than what we've seen in Arizona the last couple of years?
And Rich, can I preface this by saying a lot of this is me being bitter because he didn't sign with my team, so that's why I'm kind of upset.
Right.
You know, but he is everything that we think he
is. No, and
I
know, but you on the Cowboys did not want to or can't, because you know you got to pay some other guys. You can't pay him what the Titans just did. No, he went to go find a spot where he feels he can win, maybe not win it all, but don't tell that to the Tennessee Titans as they start camp this week. But we as fans looking at it, and we're talking about the AFC East, the way that's constructed with Rodgers in it now, and Mahomes, as we're learning, is the red ass who basically screams at Max Crosby, you mess with the wrong MF-er. You're like, where did that kid come from?
Multiple times.
He's been there the whole time. Okay. We're assuming Denver's improved. We're assuming Deshaun Watson and the Browns are going to improve. We're assuming the Ravens are going to be better. We're assuming Burrow's going to be Burrow. And
Steelers are going to pick it
up. Right. And you put it all together, and sure enough, boom. The Titans just didn't make much of a difference. They just reshuffled their AFC South deck chair. And I get it. I understand it. They needed him. They got to pay him. And the question is, what happened in New England? Why didn't he go there? Did New England not pony up for him? Did he not really consider them? Were the Patriots just something to go ahead and create a market where the Titans had to pony up? Is that what happened? Did he have no intention of signing there? Was he interested in that? How did the Patriots woo him? What happened? Because they could use him too, unless they're just going to go into the season with their usual, which is opportunistic defense, special teams that makes you make the mistake, situationally smarter than you, running backs for days, and a quarterback who, shrug emoji in year three, we're assuming Bill O'Brien makes him better. Who are you going to be, as we heard last week from Damian Woody on Friday, circling in a defensive meeting saying this guy can't beat you? Is it Juju Smith-Schuster? Is it Devontae Parker? I'll tell you what, if they had DeAndre Hopkins, you'd be circling him. And in this AFC East that is vastly improved, can the Patriot way get them to where they want to go? And that's essentially, with DeAndre Hopkins choosing Tennessee and Vrabel and what they have cooking over New England, is it just the money? Why didn't New England pony up the money if they could have used him? They're not as desperate. Like, for instance, Belichick, as of today, doesn't have the most receiving touchdowns of anybody on the team.
That's funny.
As Tennessee had with Vrabel until DeAndre Hopkins signed, right? So, by the way, anyone wants to know, he's 60 clear of Vrabel in career touchdown receptions, 72-12. Hopkins over Vrabel. But what I'm saying is, everything that I just said, can the Patriot way be the way for the Patriots to show they still have what it takes to win a division when you've got Buffalo, the Jets, and Miami having, on paper, for sure, a much more explosive situation than what New England's bringing to the table when they play you in 2023? And if not, is this really a clock that could strike midnight for Bill Belichick in New England? As you've been pointing out, Chris. And reports. Where was that report that Belichick's friends are nervous his seat is hot?
Oh, I saw that over the weekend.
So Tom Curran's going to join us, as always, to set records straight. Overreaction Monday, as always, with this being a Monday, I have a top five list. Top five quarterbacks in need of a bounce back season in 2023. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets are opening training camp on Wednesday. A date for Hard Knocks has been set. August 8th, Tuesday after Hall of Fame weekend. Let's go. Timothy Oliphant in studio in hour number three. We've got Tom Curran in hour number two, but let's take a break. What did we learn from Capitol Hill's grilling of two PGA Tour executives last week going into Open Championship weekend? If you recall, the LIV Tour and the PGA Tours shocked everybody on the doorstep of the U.S. Open. Now here comes what used to be called, in my day, the British Open, but now is now called the Open Championship, which I'm sure it's been called ever since Braveheart grabbed a 9-iron. But that said, it's called the Open Championship week. And yeah, by the way, it's a great kid song.
That's good.
That's just like
on Kids Bop.
Yeah, like what Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is on the flip side of when Braveheart grabbed an iron arm. Let's take a break. I think it's the same tune. Alan Shipnook of the Fire Pit Collective, the best-selling author about Phil Mickelson, coming up next. If you're like me and you're on the run, you need help finding good food and eating right. And now that we're in the thick of summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support sunny, active days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track reaching your goals. If you're too busy with summer plans to cook but want to make sure you're eating well, with Factor, skip the extra trip to the grocery store and the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Then get back outside and soak up the warm weather. This July, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/Eisen50 and use code Eisen50 to get 50% off. That's code Eisen50 at factormeals.com/Eisen50 to get 50% off.
The average on-farm income in the United States was a loss of $1,100. 60% of U.S. pork comes from one company wholly owned by the Chinese. And farmers are more likely to commit suicide than veterans. Folks, we got a problem. I'm Lucinda, 8th-generation farmer and founder of Moink. Moo plus oink. We offer grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon, shipped straight from the heart of rural America. Come stand shoulder to shoulder with us by putting the family farm at the center of your supper table. What's in it for you? You mean besides saving the family farm and enjoying the highest quality meat on God's green earth? Jeez, want me to hang the moon for you too? I'd love to.
Go to moinkbox.com/yum right now and get a free gift in your first order.
Get to getting while the getting is good.
Go to moinkbox.com/yum. Moinkbox.com/yum.
I guarantee you're fixing to say, oink, oink, I'm just so happy I got moinked.
Back here on the program, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Alan Shipnook of the Fire Pit Collective will be joining us in a matter of moments here on the program. We got lots to talk about here. Lots going on in the football world. We're ready to go. You could feel it, right? I can feel it.
It's getting close, man.
It's close.
Where did you put that?
Did Mike move it?
No, it's all right.
Feel it.
There you go. It's coming.
Ohtani watch, 15 days to the deadline. Please.
We'll talk about that. How about Ohtani, man? Homer was number 34?
34.
It's a home run, and it was one of those, that's not nice. They're up 8-3, and then they lose 9-8. And then the Yankees. The Yankees are 6 over now or 5 over now? 6 over. And it's tied for last place. If they're in the American League Central, we're sitting here thinking, well, they just got some time to work out the kinks, but you know, when they're going to make the playoffs. But in the American League East, it's just like, okay, you're out, and now, but they're just, you know, you're just 2 out of the wild card. Yep. The Astros are beginning to figure it out, which is a problem for the rest of the American League.
Yep. Although Framber Valdez is injured.
I got you. But don't they have like 15 guys in the minors who sound like the name Framber Valdez that are going to come up and pitch like Framber Valdez?
The Orioles.
Everybody. And the Orioles keep bringing up. You know who keeps bringing up people? The Reds keep bringing up people.
I know.
And I'm like thinking to myself, when are the Yankees bringing somebody up?
Well, the Orioles now have the number one prospect in baseball, and he might get Jackson Holliday, Matt Holliday's son.
Matt Holliday's kid's coming up.
He might getting called up soon.
And then, you know, hey, look at these teams getting all these top picks, and they're finally coming around.
Yep.
Reds and Orioles. That'd be a fun World Series, by the way. Two fan bases that would just be losing their friggin' minds in these two great ballparks, right? A lot of young kids. Let's go. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial right here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. It's Open Championship Week. Coming off of the big weekend victories by Rory McIlroy and Steph Curry. I never thought I would say that in a sentence, but it's the truth.
Does Rory get a bid now? Is he in the open?
Who?
I mean, sorry, is Steph in the open?
I don't know. In Tahoe? I wouldn't want him showing up. I don't know. Is the LIV Tour trying to get him? You know,
that would be amazing.
Yeah, maybe he'll be in the Flaming Baskets. Is that the name of his team?
Offer Steph ownership of the team and let's go. That's funny.
Joining us right now from the Fire Pit Collective and the author of a must-read book on Phil Mickelson is Alan Shipnuck back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, is the LIV Tour offering Steph Curry a team now? What do you think? What do you got for me on that, Alan? Any reporting?
It's not a bad idea. That walk-off eagle by Steph was absolutely electric and lit up social media like few things ever do in golf. So, I mean, it is interesting. Steph has talked about wanting to play the senior tour when he turns 50, and various jocks have said things to that effect. But, I mean, he's got a chance. The guy has club head speed. He obviously has a great touch, and he just has a unique mind for competition. So it's a fun thought exercise.
Yeah, I mean,
15 years away, but I'd love to see it.
Yeah, how many sports can somebody have elite knacks for meeting the moment and having big moments from like an ace over the weekend, then obviously an eagle to win it. That was awesome to see. I mean, that was a lot of fun, but to say the least.
A lot of
fun. So let's jump into the world of the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour. It was on the outset of the U.S. Open when the merger, don't call it a merger, and now agreement to have an agreement was shocking everybody. Where does that stand right now as we're hitting Open Championship Week, Alan?
Well, the big development since then, of course, were the Senate hearings. The hearings themselves were somewhat uneventful, but the document dump that accompanied the hearing, you know, 276 pages, there was a lot of nuggets in there. I mean, the big revelation was that Yasir Al-Rumayyan, who's now the biggest shot caller in golf, was sort of sacrificed Greg Norman at the altar as part of this deal, which was not a shock, but to see it in the black and white of a Senate subcommittee appendix was interesting. The testimony from Jimmy Dunn, who was representing essentially the PGA Tour and this new entity, it was revealing because he was pretty clear, like, they have a long way to go to get this deal done. And the tour, their primary motivation was to end the litigation, which that was successful. The lawsuits were dismissed with prejudice, means they can't be refiled no matter what. And so on some level, the tour has already accomplished what they hoped to. How this framework agreement becomes something definitive, it's going to be very tricky, very painstaking negotiations. And LIV, the public investment fund, clearly has the upper hand here, because if the deal is not consummated and things just go back to how they were beforehand, LIV is in a much stronger position because there's going to be this push to get world ranking points for LIV golf. That's what I was spelled out in the framework agreement. That's been one of the biggest things that's reduced its credibility. And more to the point, all the players who stayed loyal to the PGA Tour, the tour was not loyal to them. So now there's no incentive whatsoever to say no to any LIV offers that could be forthcoming. So, you know, LIV could finally get the players it's always wanted, the John Rahms, Hideki Matsuyamas, you name it. And why should these guys turn the money down when Jimmy Dunn and Jay Monahan and the whole tour infrastructure was happy to take the money in the end? So there's a lot of pressure on the PGA Tour now to get this deal done. And LIV clearly can ask for things that they've always wanted, or the public investment fund, that is. And it's going to be very fascinating next few months to see what happens.
Yeah, because, you know, Jimmy Dunn and the PGA Tour have basically said they're in the driver's seat. They've got more board seats, if you will, on the new company, as they're referring it to. where the investment is exclusively the public investments funds to make, and how the LIV Tour, you mentioned, you know, Greg Norman thrown overboard. It does appear that the LIV Tour, if this merger, don't call it a merger, does in fact happen, would be no more, even though they're supposed to get a good hearing about it, right, with some players coming back into the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Where did that go? How did that evaporate over the last month from what you just said?
Well, so Alan, here's the thing. On paper, the PGA Tour has more board seats, and they've been selling that as we have control. But the overarching lesson of this whole thing is that money always wins. And in what business does somebody put all the money in, but they don't have control? That never happens. The public investment fund is putting the money in. They are going to have control, no matter how the board seats are divvied up. And just look at how we got to this moment. The PGA Tour had a player advisory committee. It had a board of directors. It had a defined governance system. And all that got tossed aside basically over cigars, where Al Rumayyan kind of reshaped the entire future of the sport. So they're putting way too much stock in the board configuration, I believe. And that also goes to this issue of LIV's future. That's going to be decided by Yasir Al-Rumayyan, not by Jay Monahan or Jimmy Dunn or the board itself, because it can remain on this parallel track where the public investment fund can have it both ways. They can keep LIV going, and they have total control of that product. And if they want to play more events in Saudi Arabia, or they want to take it to all these different corners of the world, they can schedule it however they want. They can completely use that as kind of this beachhead for whatever else they're hoping to accomplish through golf. The PGA Tour investment, you know, that the PIF is on the hook for potentially, there's going to be a lot of cooks in the kitchen. They're not going to have that same kind of total control of the schedule and the granular details. But it does give them this authenticity and this stamp of approval from the ruling class that they've been seeking, and it does give the PIF entree into all the tour sponsors and all the business possibilities there. So I think they'll keep LIV going as long as they feel like it has value to them. And it's increasingly clear that there will be a LIV schedule in 2024, because it's going to take so long to get this other deal potentially done. And if the PIF walks away from LIV, they lose their leverage in this larger negotiation. So now it's possible that after 24, Yasir will say, you know what, we had a good run, but I want to put all my eggs in this new company. And that could happen, but it'll be his decision to make, nobody else's. And I think that, you know, LIV keeps announcing these sponsorship deals, individual teams, the league itself. And the thing that why there's this antitrust lawsuit is because the tour is fighting so hard to disenfranchise LIV and to marginalize it with its broadcast partners, with its vendors, with its sponsors. Those walls are all down now. And if LIV can get access to some of the tour distribution channels and get some of its tournaments on network TV or ESPN or whatever it might be, If they can start cutting deals with all these blue chip companies that the tour does business with, it's a much more viable business. So I wouldn't necessarily buy what Jay Monahan and Jimmy Dunn are selling. I feel like Yasir is really the ultimate shot caller on LIV's future, and he's gonna decide how this thing plays out.
The Fire Pit Collective's Alan Shipnuck on the state of what's going on in the world of professional golf as we have hit the Open Championship week right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So how's this all going to play out at Royal Liverpool this week, do you think, with Cam Smith coming off of the LIV Tour as a title defender? This was I think the Open Championship was his last win prior to bolting for the LIV Tour last year. What do you have for me on your crystal ball for the week here?
Yeah, blessedly, once we get to Thursday and they start counting the scores at Royal Liverpool, all this stuff will recede in the background, and it'll just be about, you know, my favorite golf tournament of the year. And yeah, I mean, Cam Smith is dangerous. He's been playing well all year. Royal Liverpool is a quirky little bandbox of a golf course. You know, when Tiger won there in 2006, and he famously swung driver only once the whole week. I mean, it's really a finesse position kind of golf course. You can't overpower it, unlike the old course. And, you know, Cam Smith's not a bomber. He just has such a mastery around the green that he's dangerous anytime you tease it up. But especially on this week where he's not losing strokes off the tee. Of course, Rory McIlroy's coming in as the headliner and certainly the favorite after his rousing, you know, walk-off birdie on the last hole at the Scottish Open yesterday. So, and Rory won in 2014, the last time that the Open was played at this golf course. So you feel like the stars are aligned for him to finally break this, you know, brutal, almost decade-long drought in the major championships. But, you know, with Rory, it's metaphysical. Obviously, his game is in a good place, but can he filter out all this other stuff? And he, more than anybody, put his reputation on the line from this battle between the tours. And, you know, Jay Monahan, Jimmy Dunn, they sort of tore open his chest cavity and ripped out his heart and stepped on it with metal spikes. I mean, Rory had been the leading advocate and spokesman against the Saudi money. And so you could see that at the U.S. Open, especially at the start of the week, he looked a little deflated. Of course, he found his game because he's just so good and wound up finishing second. But maybe he's unencumbered. Maybe he's been freed up. And he can finally say, you know what, I'm out. I don't care about this politics. You guys deal with this. And he could just keep things a little more simpler, and his mind will be a little less cluttered, and he can just freewheel it, because Rory McIlroy is so good at golf. You see it every week except for the majors. Like, he just has to get out of his own way and just play his normal game, and that's good enough. So because of the good mojo of returning to this golf course, and because of the macro developments in the sport, I mean, it feels like it's Rory's week, but we shall see.
Well, I hope he does play that way, Alan, and I hope he does view it that way. Although I got to be honest, everybody who I speak to as well tells me that aren't Rory and Jimmy Dunn tight? Like, did Rory not get a heads up at all? Did he not know at all that this was happening, coming in the works over cigars? No, zero heads up from Jimmy Dunn, right? At all, Alan?
Yeah, so they are tight, and Jimmy actually got Rory's father a membership at Seminole Golf Club in Florida, which is one of the inner sanctums of the sport.
Right.
And, you know, Jerry McIlroy is this former blue-collar bartender. He does not fit the profile of the typical Seminole member, to say the least. So it does tell you the closeness of those families. Rory had an inkling, because he had actually, and this came out in the Senate document, Rory had sat down with Yasir Al-Rumayyan in November at the season-ending European Tour event in Dubai, and they had this sort of philosophical chat and agreed that the sport needed to be reunified. And that was actually an important moment. It was sort of the first olive branch between these warring tribes. And then this guy, Roger Devlin, British businessman and big figure in the game, he had set up that meeting, then he used that in his letter to Jimmy Dunn to begin this correspondence between the two sides, saying, hey, Rory and Yasir sat down, it went well. And so Rory knew that there was communication going on, but he really didn't know that it was going to happen this fast, and the sweeping nature of what was going to be agreed upon. So I mean, he was as surprised as the rest of us, I think, in the end. And that's part of the problem. You know, I don't know if you watched the Senate subcommittee hearings, they were morbidly fascinating, but the senators kept coming back to this point with Jimmy Dunn and then Ron Price, who's the COO of the PGA Tours. They kept saying, you're calling yourself a member organization. How could your members not know what was happening? How could you not include them in the negotiations and the conversations? And they didn't really have a good answer for that, other than, you know, confidentiality was important, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, not only is Rory close to Jimmy Dunn, Rory is on the board of directors of the PGA Tour. I mean, of anybody, he should have been in the loop. So the cloak and dagger nature of the negotiations remains interesting. I mean, I get it. There was a lot at stake. If it had gone public, there would have been such blowback. It could have just dynamited the whole deal. So I understand why they were so secret, but it is fascinating that they didn't let Rory and maybe one or two other key players into the conversation. But I think ultimately, you know, the grown-ups, the money guys, had decided what they wanted to do, and they didn't want any interference, and they didn't want any naysayers.
So last one for you, Alan Chipnuck, the Fire Pit Collective, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. This may sound flippant, but it is not. And it is born out of the Best of All Worlds document that got released by the U.S. Senate subcommittee that the LIV Tour sent to the PGA Tour. And again, any negotiation, if emails throughout a negotiation get sent out, the YOLO requests from one person to the other, when they finally hit the light of day, may not look very good. I totally understand that. But you said about 10 minutes ago to start this off that the Saudis, PIF, Yasser, has the upper hand, essentially, here. And that if this thing goes away, the LIV Tour continues, the Saudis just keep pumping billions into it, and they also now don't have the threat of a lawsuit over their heads, so they have the upper hand. Would Yasser truly pitch all of that for a green jacket? I'm serious. Is that possible? You laugh, yeah, but what do you think? Like, it would be just all for if he gets a green jacket.
It's very serious because this has been the overarching question to all of this is, what do the Saudis want? What is their end game here? And a big part of the answer is they want acceptance in the upper echelon of Western society. Mm-hmm. They want validation. They want to be seen as, you know, modern and as important in the Western world. There is no greater symbol than a green jacket and being welcomed into the ultimate club, which is, of course, Augusta National. So, I mean, the answer is probably yes, because that would give Yasser, and by extension, the Saudis, the stamp of approval they've never been able to get from the ruling class of America, of Europe. I mean, no king, no ambassador has ever been welcomed like Yasser would be if he were to be made a member of Augusta National and the RNA, which is also put into that same document. So now the surest way to not get a green jacket is to publicly advocate for a green jacket. So the chances of becoming an Augusta National member just went to zero, because the last thing the good old boys down in Augusta, Georgia want is to be seen as this bargaining chip and this transactional thing. So unfortunately for Yasser, it's never going to happen because that document was made public. But it does get to the heart of the matter, and in the black and white agate of an appendix of a Senate, you know, subcommittee document, it's like, this is what it's all about. And it was a fascinating little nugget in, you know, buried within a lot of pages of interesting discovery.
I didn't mean to. I honestly, that wasn't asked as being flippant, because it would just be amazing.
No, I know.
If all of the recriminations and negotiations and the upper hand and the shifting sands, for the lack of a better phrase, that we're seeing as this agreement is just an agreement to get an agreement, and how now it's a month old and how things have changed or shifting one way or not, that if Yasser al-Rumayyan gets a green jacket or an RNA membership, it's all over. And the board seats, who cares? He's got a jacket. That's the way it kind of looks like, you know. But as you point out, Alan, you know, when you talk about Fight Club, you don't get in. So I guess my last question for you is, what is more likely? Yasser gets a green jacket, or you get a care package of capes from the High Flyers at the LIV Tour? Alan, what's more likely?
I mean, I would legit rock that cape, at least on Halloween.
You know?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's an amazing moment in golf. And it's even a subtext to all of this is, you know, Jimmy Dunn is the president of Seminole Golf Club, and other PGA Tour board directors are members there, as is Seth Waugh, who runs the PGA of America. And there's one of the things this has brought to light is this cabal of these old-timey golf guys who have had absolute power in the golf world, the Seminole guys, the Augusta National guys. This is the first time that they've ever been threatened, and that outsiders have come in and really shaken up the sport. And to see their flailing, and it's really interesting. I mean, it's something that I delve into. You know, I'm writing a book about this whole this whole bit, this whole war between the tour and LIV Golf. And it, I've talked to a lot of people about it. And so there's the green jacket news break is more impactful than people realize, because it really is revealing. And I think Phil Mickelson is probably not going to send me a Hot Flyers care package, but I could imagine that a LIV Golf flak might. So I think that's probably, I probably have a better chance of getting a cape than Yasir does of getting a green jacket at this point.
That's the answer I was looking for. Thank you, Alan. You're always a straight shooter. Enjoy Open Championship week and look for more of my calls. Appreciate it.
I look forward to it. Thanks.
You got it. The Fire Pit Collective's Alan Shipnuck right here at Alan Shipnuck on Twitter and Instagram. I follow him. You should as well, right here on The Rich Eisen Show. More likely he gets a High Flyers cape from Team Mickelson than Yasir gets a green jacket. I'm not kidding, right? Don't you? When I saw that, it leapt out at me, and I know it's YOLO. What? Seriously, like any negotiation.
You don't get what you don't ask for.
Honestly, I've asked for stuff from when I'm in a negotiation with NFL Network. You'd be like, really? You asked for that?
Yeah.
What's one thing that you?
I asked to form a production company with them.
Nice.
You know what I got back? There was sand and I pounded it.
Yeah. Just a bunch of ha ha ha.
No, I'm serious. No, they weren't wired for that sort of request from an on-air individual, no matter how many years I've had there.
Right.
But I tried. Then there's an email chain, I'm sure, and if it comes out in a subcommittee, it wouldn't be, it would be weird or awkward, just like this. Yeah, but this is telling. Line. It's just like, hey, while we're, talking about coming together, how about I get a green jacket? And his point is, it's not that audacious for him to ask it. In his mind, it is to Augusta National. And if Augusta National gives it to him, now it looks like their green jacket is a commodity, not a specialty, not a rarity. It's now a commodity. And I can't imagine a jacket has not been a commodity ever. Ever. Right? In the history of Augusta National. Maybe it hasn't been, truly. I don't know. But his point is he didn't laugh at all. Well, he did laugh. And then he's like, that's actually a serious, germane question.
He also said asking for it won't get it, so you should stop asking.
Oh, I'm not asking.
Right, like Nick Saban.
I'm asking for a High Flyers cape.
Quit asking.
I want a cape, don't you?
Have we seen these capes?
I'm not.
Didn't George Costanza's father's lawyer have a cape?
Have a cape. Yeah, that was Larry David.
It was LD.
Right. And a cape, yeah. I don't know. And Batman, Crusader? I don't know how many other capes. Zorro?
Superman, Zorro.
Yeah. I'm not a cape guy.
Cape. I'll rock a cape.
Cod? that's your cape?
Cape Cod, your cape? That is definitely
very
my,
good.
My
Give
cape
me a cape.
Hey, great news for the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
And I can't wait to get to that. That's
probably
next.
Not great news just because you're kind of a hater.
Excuse me. How dare you?
Well,
there's no haterade being sprayed around here, sir.
Are you sure about that?
It's called a quote and a fact, and it is good news for you and Cowboys Nation.
Mm-hmm.
844-204-RICH number to dial. I wouldn't change the dial if you have one. That's next.
Are you currently enjoying this show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep, going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So, switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Do I call you a free agent quarterback sitting here? What do I call you?
Dak? I don't know. I mean, this is my first time going through this. You tell me. Call me whatever, I guess.
I will call you Dak Prescott.
That works.
I'm going to ask you the question this way about what contract you think you're going to get. Okay, in terms of pie. Because I've heard there's less pie. I've heard there's
more pie.
That's right. There's Jerry Jones right there, the voice of Jerry Jones. We've heard there's less pie. We've heard there's more pie. I'm wondering if you think this is deep dish pie. How deep is it a deep dish pie?
If I'm guessing, I'd say yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it franchise pie?
I would say.
You'd say?
Well, no, I mean, I don't know what kind of pie we're talking
franchise
about.
Franchise tag pie.
Excuse me,
is it franchise tag pie?
Oh, I don't know. I mean...
Long-term pie? Is it long-term pie?
I don't know. I just want a piece of the pie. Just put it like that.
Okay.
I'm getting hungry, right? I mean,
that's it? Yeah, okay. And is it a pie that starts with a four? Is it a pie that starts with a four?
Like I just said, I'm leaving up to my agents to cut my piece of the pie.
Okay.
I'm just ready for it and ready to eat. So
okay.
When that happens, I'm ready to get to work and excited for this offseason.
And we've also heard through DeMarcus Ware told us that when you sit in Jerry's office, have you gotten the Jerry's office meeting yet?
I've been in Jerry's office.
Okay, and that he lights a candle, turns the lights down, and gives you a whole Dallas Cowboys speech. Have you had that? You have not had that yet?
No, okay. I haven't had that one yet.
He says that that happens when he's trying to close a deal. So I think you'll know that you're really close if you
when
walk
the
in.
Lights turn off.
Lights go okay. down.
Thank you for that warning and that heads up. Just, so now I know like what's going on when that happens.
There's apparently a votive candle with a Dallas Cowboys star right on the side of it. I don't know if it's scented. It might be the smell of pie of some sort.
Right.
I'm just saying that hasn't happened yet, is what you're saying.
It hasn't happened.
Okay, when you
it
get that call, happened. You know, wow, I'm close.
Okay.
Boy, every time I watch that back, it gets more awkward. Not gonna lie. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Dallas Cowboy football. They should sign Ezekiel Elliott. I'm waiting for that news to cross. I'm waiting.
I think you're right. That's a good move.
I'm waiting for the news to cross.
He had a dozen touchdowns last year. Let's
bring the band back together. As Tony Pollard signs a tender and looks like he's going to play for $10 million. You know, Zeke's just got to, I guess, to do the Pulp Fiction thing, not let pride mess with his mind. But
what's the deal, though? Like 1 year,
know.
$4 million,
I
something like that? Or a three
if
plus
I'm the Cowboys, just call him up and say, what's your number? And hear it from him and then whittle it down if that's what you really need to do. Quite frankly. Fans love him. He knows the system. He might just, as you pointed out last week, just, I don't want to hear from you. You know, I don't want to hear from you. You didn't, you know, I don't want to hear from you.
Look, I've been in that situation.
I know.
You know.
So, you know. And plus, you join an offense that was on tilt last year. And the quarterback is going to be vastly improved. All I got to do is ask him. I love Dak, man. He's been here. He's a sweetheart of a guy. And he is better than most.
Not according to the internet.
Better than most. I understand you make your top five list. He's not on it. You make your top 10 list. He's on it.
Is he?
He's not.
Oh, I don't know, man.
Well, I put the number 10 out there for the moment because that appears to be the magic number of interceptions he will be under this year. You know, double-digit interceptions last year. He said at his, I believe it was a youth camp, I know who I am, and you can go back and take away half of those off drops. I'm not saying it's on the receiver, but if you cut that in half, then we start talking about those. Nobody's talking about it. Some of it is the offense and them understanding exactly where we are. Mike does an amazing job with those guys. They know where to be, why to be, when they're getting looked at. That's going to be a big jump. I won't have 10 interceptions this year. I love that. Speak it into existence, Dak.
Yeah, I like that.
Now, he's also saying some of them were, you know, guy dropped it, guy tipped it, wasn't on me. That's true. And did he take a little bit of a shot at, you know, McCarthy's offense in a way? You know where the guys are going to be? Or
like
the guys
that.
Know where to be, and so it's going to be... Obviously, we'll just cherry pick what we want to denigrate him. But, I mean... 15 interceptions last year. It just was too many.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest. Just shoot straight here. It's always with the Dallas Cowboys, the weird stuff. Always the weird stuff. Yeah. Always the weird stuff. Just like cut out the weird stuff. Can we cut out the weird stuff? What do I mean by that? As I said, Zeke should come back. Zeke should come back not only because they need him, not only
know,
because he might need them.
With this.
Oh, yes.
Can I finish this sentence for you?
His Cowboys career can't end with
that play.
Weird play. The snap. Last two seasons ended with the weird. And I understand, you know, both of those situations were desperate. And it didn't look good anyway. Last year, that thing was over. I don't know what that play was. Oh, 2 years ago, you know.
Dak was hustling.
He was hustling.
Make a play.
And the umpire was not hustling enough. But when you're depending on the umpire's 40-yard dash speed, that's weird.
That's weird.
Cut out the weird stuff. I know that's something that you can't really come out and fully define. You just know it when you see it. It's kind of like that other thing, you know?
Like when your quarterback runs into his center's butt. Like that type of weird stuff.
That's a sort of serious. You're getting warmer to what I was referring to in my analogy. Look, cut out the weird stuff. Sign Zeke back and get Dak.
Yeah, Zach. You said it right.
Yeah, get the Zeke
and Dak.
Zeke and Dak. Get him back. Bring the whole thing back together and tee it up and let it fly.
You know, last year, PFF, they tracked a stat called turnover-worthy plays. Essentially, that translates to throws that were dangerous enough that they should have warranted an interception.
Maybe yes, sir.
And didn't. And what they found out is he had 6 picks that were essentially deemed not his fault, meaning guys in the wrong spot. Guys, Noah Brown, for instance, dropping a ball, 2 balls that hit him in the hand and got picked for pick 6s. So, yeah, I mean, 15's a lot. But not all of those. But you can also look at it like this. If you're the quarterback and you throw the ball, it's your fault. And that's how some people are going to view it, no matter what the stats or PFF.
Noah Brown, that was one that just jumps out at you. So, you know, not all Buckeyes are helpful to the Cowboys. I'm just saying get the running back, Buckeye back. Get him back. You need him. You need him. Although, again, I keep saying over and over again, that I don't see in practice, they might. I mean, Deuce Vaughn might be an answer here for a nice little change of pace. And
yeah, maybe. What if he's the next Darren Sproles?
Could be. Yeah. From Kansas State, same school.
Yeah. At Rich Eisen Show, vote is Dak a top 10 quarterback heading into this season?
Well, it's going to be resoundingly no, because that's what the internet is, a bunch of Cowboys haters.
I don't know. I'm looking at the list. I mean, he's
top 10. I'll do that.
Guys, even if he was, Malik Davis, people will not allow themselves to vote yes.
I keep saying Malik Davis is the backup there, and he might not be ready. He might be ready. I don't know. It's what the Cowboys look at in training camp, which is right around the corner.
Yes, sir.
Tom Curran on why the Pats didn't get D-Hop coming up.
You got Geno top 10?
No. I've got – hold on a second. Let's do it.
That was a very quick no. I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
I got you. Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, Aaron Rodgers. That's 6 off the top of my head. Hurts is 7.
Why Herbert above Hurts?
I'm just naming names. It's not in any particular order. Obviously, Mahomes is the only one in particular order.
You got Tua?
I put Dak above Tua.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Lamar?
I'd put Dak above Lamar, too, right now.
Kirk Cousins?
Absolutely above Kirk Cousins.
Really? You want to check numbers?
I got your numbers. I understand.
Okay. What about anyone the 49ers throw out there?
Mm-hmm. I'll take Dak.
Geno?
I'll take Dak over Russ, too.
Yeah.
What about Stafford? Do you love him?
I take Stafford over Dak if Stafford is healthy.
Aaron Rodgers?
I already said Aaron Rodgers.
Deshaun?
I'll take Dak over Deshaun.
Interesting.
Yeah, plus my phone's not ringing at 2 in the morning over anything Dak's going to do.
Nope,
but that's still, hey, we're waiting to see if Deshaun can do it because we haven't seen him do it in a while because of what he did do off the field, right?
What about Daniel Jones?
I'll take Dak over him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The guy who won a playoff game last year?
This guy's suddenly now caping for Daniel Jones.
I'm not. I'm just pointing out Daniel Jones won a playoff game last year.
I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I'm high on Dak.
Don't forget, Dak won the playoff game last year, too? Or
Jared Goff.
Tom Curran coming up.
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks.
Collision has been struggling a little bit out of the gate with these ticket sales.
This was a major show announced on a major network with what everybody thought was this huge star, CM Punk. I said he was going to be the biggest financial flop in wrestling history, and I think I'm being proven right every minute of the day.
83 Weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.